English test for pilots, listening comprehension. You are going to hear 12 texts, announcements, interviews or reports connected with general or commercial aviation. You will hear each text twice. At the beginning of each new question, you will hear a signal. For each question, you have 15 seconds to read the three possible answers, A, B, or C. You will hear the text, after which you will again have 10 seconds to choose and mark the correct answer on the answer sheet. Finally, you will hear the text a second time and have a further 10 seconds to check your answer. Question 1. Read question 1.
After departing on a cross-country flight in night visual meteorological conditions, the pilot requested flight information service from air traffic control. According to radar data, about 16 minutes after the takeoff, the airplane leveled off at 15,000 feet, mean sea level. About 30 minutes later, the airplane was still about 90 miles away from its destination when air traffic controllers observed the airplane beginning to descend. When air traffic controllers subsequently questioned the pilot as to his intentions, the answers were garbled and incomprehensible. Recorded data from air traffic control radar indicated that the airplane continued its descent and at about 11,000 feet radar contact was lost. Post-accident investigation revealed no pre-impact mechanical malfunctions or failures. The pilot flew more than 40 minutes at altitudes higher than 12,500 feet. The use of supplemental oxygen could not be reconstructed, and therefore it is believed that the pilot was suffering hypoxia, which severely degraded his performance and led to the fatal accident. After departing on a cross-country flight in night visual meteorological conditions, the pilot requested flight information service from air traffic control. According to radar data, about 16 minutes after the takeoff, the airplane leveled off at 15,000 feet, mean sea level. About 30 minutes later, the airplane was still about 90 miles away from its destination when air traffic controllers observed the airplane beginning to descend. When air traffic controllers subsequently questioned the pilot as to his intentions, the answers were garbled and incomprehensible. Recorded data from air traffic control radar indicated that the airplane continued its descent and at about 11,000 feet radar contact was lost. Post-accident investigation revealed no pre-impact mechanical malfunctions or failures. The pilot flew more than 40 minutes at altitudes higher than 12,500 feet. The use of supplemental oxygen could not be reconstructed, and therefore it is believed that the pilot was suffering hypoxia, which severely degraded his performance and led to the fatal accident. Question 2. Read question 2. aircraft performance.
The pilot reported that he performed an engine run-up prior to takeoff and that everything was normal. He had the flaps extended 2 notches when he initiated the takeoff to the north on the 2,500 feet long wet grass runway. The airplane became airborne about halfway down the runway. The pilot stated upon reaching 65 to 70 miles per hour, he reduced the flaps to 1 notch to maintain the best rate of climb. He stated that the airplane cleared the initial group of trees before descending. The airplane made contact with the trees and sustained substantial damage to the fuselage and both wings. A witness said the airplane was mushy during the takeoff and the nose remained high prior to the right wing dropping and the airplane's descending. The operation of the airplane near the maximum gross weight at higher altitude and a wet runway degraded the airplane's takeoff performance. The pilot reported that he did not retract the gear prior to impact.
Aircraft performance.
The pilot reported that he performed an engine run-up prior to takeoff and that everything was normal. He had the flaps extended 2 notches when he initiated the takeoff to the north on the 2,500 feet long wet grass runway. The airplane became airborne about halfway down the runway. The pilot stated upon reaching 65 to 70 miles per hour, he reduced the flaps to 1 notch to maintain the best rate of climb. He stated that the airplane cleared the initial group of trees before descending. The airplane made contact with the trees and sustained substantial damage to the fuselage and both wings. A witness said the airplane was mushy during the takeoff and the nose remained high prior to the right wing dropping and the airplane's descending. The operation of the airplane near the maximum gross weight at higher altitude and a wet runway degraded the airplane's takeoff performance. The pilot reported that he did not retract the gear prior to impact.
Question 3. Read question 3.
There has been a considerable consternation in the aviation media recently about the lack of progress in improving the general aviation accident rate. National Aviation Safety Agency Speaker Ms. Doreen Miller expressed her frustration in the general aviation accident rate in the United States has essentially plateaued at around 1,500 accidents every year, emphasizing the agency sees the same type of accidents over and over again and that many accidents are entirely preventable. She proposed 3 steps to reduce the general aviation accident rate. 1. Understanding what the cause of the accident. 2. Identify preventative strategies. 3. Get the word out to the general aviation community. Miller's insight into the accident, especially her emphasis on fatigue as a factor is often ignored, does not reveal any total new aspects when it comes to general aviation accidents. On the other hand, it may be possible to come up with some new preventative strategies for specific weakness in the system. There has been a considerable consternation in the aviation media recently about the lack of progress in improving the general aviation accident rate. National Aviation Safety Agency Speaker Ms. Doreen Miller expressed her frustration in the general aviation accident rate in the United States has essentially plateaued at around 1,500 accidents every year, emphasizing the agency sees the same type of accidents over and over again and that many accidents are entirely preventable. She proposed 3 steps to reduce the general aviation accident rate. 1. Understanding what the cause of the accident. 2. Identify preventative strategies. 3. Get the word out to the general aviation community. Miller's insight into the accident, especially her emphasis on fatigue as a factor is often ignored, does not reveal any total new aspects when it comes to general aviation accidents. On the other hand, it may be possible to come up with some new preventative strategies for specific weakness in the system.
Question 4. Read question 4. Landing on one wheel and the importance of a pre-flight check. This story I know from photos and an incident report. The crash happened 2 weeks before I arrived at Port Alfred in order to get my private pilot license. The photographs were still displayed in the study room and there were lots of talk going on about the happening. What happened? An airplane from another field was landing at Port Alfred when the tower controller recognized that one main gear was missing. He informed the pilot, who immediately initiated a go-around. He circled above the field while the fire brigade covered the runway with foam. The pilot managed to land the plane on one wheel until full stop when it finally tilted to one side. No injuries to the pilot nor a major damage was reported. How did it happen? Before this flight, the airplane's main wheel was repaired in the airport's repair shop. While reassembling the gear, the mechanic forgot a safety pin which secured the wheel. The airplane was handed over to the pilot, who, after a pre-flight check, took off. After departure, the unsecured wheel fell off the airplane and was later found on a field. So, who was responsible for the mishap, the repair shop or the pilot? The official incident report states it was the pilot's fault because he did not do a careful pre-flight inspection. Landing on one wheel and the importance of a pre-flight check. This story I know from photos and an incident report. The crash happened 2 weeks before I arrived at Port Alfred in order to get my private pilot license. The photographs were still displayed in the study room and there were lots of talk going on about the happening. What happened? An airplane from another field was landing at Port Alfred when the tower controller recognized that one main gear was missing. He informed the pilot, who immediately initiated a go-around. He circled above the field while the fire brigade covered the runway with foam. The pilot managed to land the plane on one wheel until full stop when it finally tilted to one side. No injuries to the pilot nor a major damage was reported. How did it happen? Before this flight, the airplane's main wheel was repaired in the airport's repair shop. While reassembling the gear, the mechanic forgot a safety pin which secured the wheel. The airplane was handed over to the pilot, who, after a pre-flight check, took off. After departure, the unsecured wheel fell off the airplane and was later found on a field. So, who was responsible for the mishap, the repair shop or the pilot? The official incident report states it was the pilot's fault because he did not do a careful pre-flight inspection.
Question 5. Read question 5.
Blinding the pilot. The pilot had operated from the same aerodrome on the day preceding the accident. He stated that they were busy after it had rained the previous days, and to prevent the winds from disturbing the crop spraying operations, they would begin very early in the mornings and finish at approximately 9 o'clock the same morning. On the day of the accident, the pilot stated that he took off from Hopstead Aerodrome to an airfield situated to the south of Hopstead, where he was to engage in crop spraying operations. During landing, the ground crew was positioned at the end of the runway where they usually replenished the hopper. When the ground crew saw the aircraft landing, they switched the vehicle headlights on to guide the pilot, but he said he was blinded by the lights and that one of the main wheels ran into the soft soil next to the runway. The aircraft veered and overturned. The pilot exited the aircraft without injury, and a post-impact fire started. They were not able to extinguish the fire and the aircraft was destroyed. Blinding the pilot. The pilot had operated from the same aerodrome on the day preceding the accident. He stated that they were busy after it had rained the previous days, and to prevent the winds from disturbing the crop spraying operations, they would begin very early in the mornings and finish at approximately 9 o'clock the same morning. On the day of the accident, the pilot stated that he took off from Hopstead Aerodrome to an airfield situated to the south of Hopstead, where he was to engage in crop spraying operations. During landing, the ground crew was positioned at the end of the runway where they usually replenished the hopper. When the ground crew saw the aircraft landing, they switched the vehicle headlights on to guide the pilot, but he said he was blinded by the lights and that one of the main wheels ran into the soft soil next to the runway. The aircraft veered and overturned. The pilot exited the aircraft without injury, and a post-impact fire started. They were not able to extinguish the fire, and the aircraft was destroyed.
Question 6. Read question 6.
Engine failure. The pilot stated that after he refueled the aircraft to full capacity at fly-in aerodrome, he performed a ground run on the engine and checked the magnetos at 1600 RPM with the aircraft chocked. As the aircraft is not fitted with park brakes, he taxied to the threshold of runway 06 at fly-in and commenced with a takeoff run. He further stated that the aircraft became airborne at a speed of about 60 miles per hour in calm wind conditions, but that the aircraft failed to gain height. He then only noticed that the engine only produced 1800 RPM instead of the required 2100 RPM for the takeoff. As there was no available runway left to land back on the runway, he made a steep turn to the right in order to avoid trees ahead and elected to execute a forced landing on a ploughed field, but the right hand wing lowered and made contact with the ground. During the impact sequence, the nose and the propeller made contact with the ground and the aircraft nosed over. The pilot and passenger were not injured, but the aircraft was extensively damaged. engine failure. The pilot stated that after he refueled the aircraft to full capacity at Fly-In Aerodrome, he performed a ground run on the engine and checked the magnetos at 1600 RPM with the aircraft chocked. As the aircraft is not fitted with park brakes, he taxied to the threshold of runway 06 at Fly-In and commenced with the takeoff run. He further stated that the aircraft became airborne at a speed of about 60 miles per hour in calm wind conditions, but that the aircraft failed to gain height. He then only noticed that the engine only produced 1800 RPM instead of the required 2100 RPM for the takeoff. As there was no available runway left to land back on the runway, he made a steep turn to the right in order to avoid trees ahead and elected to execute a forced landing on a ploughed field, but the right-hand wing lowered and made contact with the ground. During the impact sequence, the nose and the propeller made contact with the ground and the aircraft nosed over. The pilot and passenger were not injured, but the aircraft was extensively damaged.
Question 7. Read question 7.
Engine failure after takeoff. On December the 12th, 1999, at approximately 0750 Zulu, the PIC, pilot in command, was giving flight training to another pilot in preparation for his commercial license test later that afternoon. On return from Pratt General Flying Area, they executed a touch-and-go landing. After the takeoff, the PIC experienced a power loss on the engine and elected to execute a forced landing. The aircraft crashed approximately 1 kilometer beyond the threshold of runway 29, 300 meters south of the runway. Both the student and the PIC sustained serious injuries in their accident, and the PIC passed away later that evening. The aircraft was destroyed during the accident. The primary cause of the accident was engine failure. However, when the engine failed, the pilot executed a very steep right-hand turn with a bank angle in excess of 30 degrees to avoid colliding into a built-up area. During this maneuver, the aircraft crashed. Engine failure after takeoff. On December the 12th, 1999, at approximately 0750 Zulu, the PIC, pilot in command, was giving flight training to another pilot in preparation for his commercial license test later that afternoon. On return from Pratt General Flying Area, they executed a touch-and-go landing. After the takeoff, the PIC experienced a power loss on the engine and elected to execute a forced landing. The aircraft crashed approximately 1 kilometer beyond the threshold of runway 29, 300 meters south of the runway. Both the student and the PIC sustained serious injuries in their accident, and the PIC passed away later that evening. The aircraft was destroyed during the accident. The primary cause of the accident was engine failure. However, when the engine failed, The pilot executed a very steep right-hand turn with a bank angle in excess of 30 degrees to avoid colliding into a built-up area. During this maneuver, the aircraft crashed.
Question 8. Read question 8.
Flying too low. At approximately 1200 Zulu, the pilot departed from Rand Aerodrome on a local private flight. After flying for approximately 45 minutes, he attempted to fly past, overhead, an aero modelling club in an easterly direction. The pilot stated that he observed and cleared some telephone wires spanned along the road on the approach, but failed to notice the power lines just further ahead. The aircraft undercarriage of the Piper Cub impacted and snagged the upper power line, causing the aircraft to pitch down. The power line eventually snapped, and the aircraft impacted the grass-covered surface with the aircraft in a 30 degrees nose-down attitude. The pilot sustained only minor injuries during the impact sequence. The aircraft sustained substantial damage to the undercarriage, fuselage, and propeller. The pilot flew the aircraft too low above the ground when he planned a fly past overhead the modeler's club field, causing the aircraft to collide with power lines spanned adjacent to a road. Flying too low. At approximately 1200 Zulu, the pilot departed from Rand Aerodrome on a local private flight. After flying for approximately 45 minutes, he attempted to fly past, overhead, an aero modelling club in an easterly direction. The pilot stated that he observed and cleared some telephone wires spanned along the road on the approach, but failed to notice the power lines just further ahead. The aircraft undercarriage of the Piper Cub impacted and snagged the upper power line, causing the aircraft to pitch down. The power line eventually snapped, and the aircraft impacted the grass-covered surface with the aircraft in a 30 degrees nose-down attitude. The pilot sustained only minor injuries during the impact sequence. The aircraft sustained substantial damage to the undercarriage, fuselage, and propeller. The pilot flew the aircraft too low above the ground when he planned a fly past overhead the modeler's club field, causing the aircraft to collide with power lines spanned adjacent to a road.
Question 9. Read question 9.
Poor technique. A 62-year-old ATPL pilot with a total of over 3,000 flying hours was flying an extra 300 on a private flight from Cape Town International to Fisan de Graal Airport. There, he performed three successful touch-and-go circuits and then departed from Fisan de Graal en route to Stellenbosch Airfield. The pilot attempted to do a tank switch but turned the fuel selector to the incorrect position. Despite several attempts, he was unable to move the fuel selector out of the off position. As he was not close enough to an airfield, the pilot chose an open area to carry out a forced landing. The aircraft sustained substantial damage to the wings, undercarriage, and propeller. The pilot sustained no injuries. This was an unsuccessful forced landing due to fuel starvation through poor technique. Poor technique. A 62-year-old ATPL pilot with a total of over 3,000 flying hours was flying an extra 300 on a private flight from Cape Town International to Fisan de Graal Airport. There, he performed three successful touch-and-go circuits and then departed from Fisan de Graal en route to Stellenbosch Airfield. The pilot attempted to do a tank switch but turned the fuel selector to the incorrect position. Despite several attempts, he was unable to move the fuel selector out of the off position. As he was not close enough to an airfield, the pilot chose an open area to carry out a forced landing. The aircraft sustained substantial damage to the wings, undercarriage, and propeller. The pilot sustained no injuries. This was an unsuccessful forced landing due to fuel starvation through poor technique.
Question 10. Read question 10.
High terrain. A 45-year-old commercial pilot took off from Greep Aerodrome in an Aeropract Alpha 22 Lima Sierra with two passengers on board on the second leg of a ferry flight to Upington Aerodrome. At about 1500 Zulu, the owner of a farm near Niekerkshoop in the Northern Cape was informed by his farm workers that there was a bush fire on the farm. The farmer investigated the fire and found the wreckage of the aeropract, where it had impacted into high ground and caught fire. He found the pilot to be deceased, but the passengers were alive, although seriously injured. Apart from the empennage, the remainder of the fuselage was consumed by the post-impact fire. The probable cause of the accident was unexpected high terrain and the pilot collided with the ground. High terrain. A 45-year-old commercial pilot took off from Greep Aerodrome in an Aeropract Alpha 22 Lima Sierra with two passengers on board, on the second leg of a ferry flight to Upington Aerodrome. At about 1500 Zulu, the owner of a farm near Niekerkshoop in the Northern Cape was informed by his farm workers that there was a bush fire on the farm. The farmer investigated the fire and found the wreckage of the aeropract, where it had impacted into high ground and caught fire. He found the pilot to be deceased, but the passengers were alive, although seriously injured. Apart from the empennage, the remainder of the fuselage was consumed by the post-impact fire. The probable cause of the accident was unexpected high terrain and the pilot collided with the ground.
Question Question 11. Read question 11.
Power lines. The pilot and owner of the Microlite aircraft had two scenic flights booked that morning. His first flight was with a 10-year-old boy, and the pilot reported that the 30-minute flight was uneventful after returning to the field. He refueled the aircraft with 50 liters. There was no wind and Kavok conditions, and the pilot then took the second passenger for a similar scenic flight over the game park. The aircraft collided with the high-tension power lines approximately 12 meters high, spanned across the open field area approximately 30 nautical miles west of his airfield. The pilot was seriously injured and airlifted to hospital. The passenger, who was fatally injured, succumbed to her injuries at the accident site. Power lines. The pilot and owner of the Microlite aircraft had two scenic flights booked that morning. His first flight was with a 10-year-old boy, and the pilot reported that the 30-minute flight was uneventful after returning to the field. He refueled the aircraft with 50 liters. There was no wind and Kavok conditions, and the pilot then took the second passenger for a similar scenic flight over the game park. The aircraft collided with the high-tension power lines approximately 12 meters high, spanned across the open field area approximately 30 nautical miles west of his airfield. The pilot was seriously injured and airlifted to hospital. The passenger, who was fatally injured, succumbed to her injuries at the accident site.
Question 12. Read question 12.
Safety on the tarmac. The embarking and disembarking of passenger with aircraft engines running increases the potential of a propeller or jet blast related incident. Passengers should take note of where the propellers are in relation to the door. Take careful note of this in the dark, as propellers can be difficult to see at night. Look carefully for other airplanes with engine running. You may not hear another aircraft engine over the noise of the aircraft you are using. Be aware of jet blasts from aircraft turning or moving on the tarmac. Even stationary propellers can be dangerous. A propeller could turn unexpectedly as a result of accidental activation of the starter motor. Safety on the tarmac. The embarking and disembarking of passenger with aircraft engines running increases the potential of a propeller or jet blast related incident. Passengers should take note of where the propellers are in relation to the door. Take careful note of this in the dark, as propellers can be difficult to see at night. Look carefully for other airplanes with engine running. You may not hear another aircraft engine over the noise of the aircraft you are using. Be aware of jet blasts from aircraft turning or moving on the tarmac. Even stationary propellers can be dangerous. A propeller could turn unexpectedly as a result of accidental activation of the starter motor.
This is the end of the test.